Hello, everybody, and welcome in to another episode of the CJ Sports Podcast. I, as ever, am your host, Charlie, and today I'm joined with a two-time BBL champion, a one-time BBL Cup champion, a BBL Playoff champion, and a man who was named to the BBL Team of the Year on two separate occasions. It's Mr. Darian Nelson-Henry. Darian, how are you doing today, man?
I'm doing well, Charlie. Thanks for having me on, and thanks for the awesome introduction. It sounds good when you say it like that, I guess.
Man, you earned that introduction. I think that's 3.5 years of effort put in. So going off the court, after the O2 Arena, obviously you retired about a month ago, and you said it hadn't quite sunk in yet. We're a month later. I know you wouldn't have started your preseason, but has it sunk in yet now? The fact that you've called curtains in your career.
It has a little bit, just in the fact that I haven't touched a basketball in like a month or a month and some change. So that's a little bit weird on that standpoint, because usually this would be about the stage or maybe even a week or two ago when I start getting back in the gym. So it's taken a bit of adjustment there. But I mean, in terms of the mental side of things, we're still like in that off season. I think maybe it'll set in August potentially. But for me, It's mainly just the uncertainty of going into the next season isn't weighing on me as heavily. So I feel like that's a big stress relief for me. Like whether it was coming back to Riders or whether it was, you know, trying to find a contract somewhere in Europe, there's always this uncertainty going into the next season. Who's going to be on my team? What kind of role am I going to have to play? What's the situation in the rest of the league going to be like? And so that's one thing that I'm not really missing, and it feels kind of good to have uncertainty in other areas of my life and not on the basketball front.
Well, I thought today would be actually a really good opportunity to sort of reflect on your whole career, starting from the early days and go through the whole thing and take a chance to look back on the whole thing, if that sounds good to you.
Yeah, great. That sounds awesome.
Let's start, I think, in high school. You're a two-time captain, a state 3A player of the year, MVP, and you were 6'10 as a senior. So, you know, a tall kid. Yeah. So, obviously, it's a bit different for a guy like you, a big man, so to speak, compared to a point guard. Like, do you feel like being taller, younger, pushed you into this kind of profession a little?
Yeah, I mean, it definitely did. I always say if I would have stuck with baseball, hopefully I would have been in the MLB or something like that, because my dad was a big baseball guy, and I think that's what he truly wanted me to do. But I mean, he was more than willing to support me in whatever I did. But yeah, he had no basketball background. My mom had the basketball background, and she also didn't really push me any direction. But I do kind of look back and think like, what would have happened if I would have stuck with baseball? But anyways, I digress. The nice thing about being massive when you're a kid is everyone wants to work you out. Everybody wants to train you. Everyone wants you on their AAU team, or they want you on their, no matter how skilled you are, you know, you're just a big body, because when you're 6'10 at 14, 15 years old, it doesn't really matter how skilled you are. So it definitely pushed me into basketball, but I'm happy with the outcome. You know, it got me a lot of awesome things in life, and I wouldn't have had it any other way.
Did you know in high school that basketball was something you wanted to try and pursue as a career? Or at that point, was it just something you did alongside your education?
Yeah, once I kind of dropped all other sports, I played baseball and American football until I was about like 14, 15 years old. And then once I dropped the other sports, I pretty much committed fully to basketball. And I was like, I'm going to at least get a scholarship out of this, if not make a career out of it. So I knew I wanted to, you know, ride it until a certain point and milk it essentially for all it was worth, which I feel like I did a pretty good job on. But yeah, it was one of those things. If I put in all this time and all this effort into something, and I didn't really see any dividends, I didn't see any payback, then I was gonna kind of beat myself up for it. So I wanted to get something out of it, and I just so happened to get a college education, a master's, an excuse to travel the world, and a wife out of it. So I think I did pretty good.
Yeah, looking back, it might have been the best career decision you ever made, right?
Yeah.
So I'm talking of the scholarship, you go to the University of Pennsylvania. And in your first season, you were quoted saying that you didn't expect to get those kinds of offensive looks. You expected to be a guy who would get on the rebounds, take up space, but you were quoted saying that you had a bigger role than you were expected. Were you surprised by your own ability going into college?
Yeah, I mean, so the opportunity was kind of twofold, at least for me. One, like, not to toot my own horn or anything, but like basketball wise, I had like a lot more like quality offers on the basketball front than Penn, like, which is a mid-major school. I really went to Penn for the academics. The basketball was just not a side thing, but it was. They play in the Big Five, which is nice. So they play Villanova, St. Joe's, LaSalle, and Temple every year. So that was like my big time exposure that I wanted. And then the Ivy League itself, like the in-conference schedule, wasn't really anything that crazy. Like the quality of basketball is good, but it's not great. But in terms of like offers that I had on the table, I had Pac-12 offers. I had an offer to Gonzaga. I had other like really like higher quality basketball offers where it's, I mean, Pac-12 is dang near NBA level at some points. So on that front, like I expected to play pretty early, but I knew I'd have to like kind of earn my role. And then when I got there, I was way overweight, like kind of out of shape. I wasn't very strong. I was just big. And so I had to like put some work in to like refine my body and get it to the point where I wanted it to. And I don't think my coaches were necessarily happy with where my body was at. So that's maybe why I didn't really play a whole lot in the beginning. And then like the second side of the coin is that the center who was starting over me, he was a junior when I came in as a freshman, which would be like his third year out of four for my British audience. And he unfortunately went down. He got mono, so he was out for a month, and when I that's when I slid into the starting role. And then he came back for I think two games, and then the second game he dislocated his elbow, which was I was right behind him because he went from the four. He played like four or five, like, so sometimes we're on the court together and he was on the fast break. Some guy undercut him and he dislocated his elbow, and it's pretty gruesome. And so then obviously he was out for the rest of the season, and that's when I like really slid into the starting role, and I kind of just never left. So on one side I was unprepared, on the other side like there was just some happenstance situation that allowed me to kind of fill in that spot, and you know the rest is history, I guess. I never stopped starting after that, and had a pretty good career, 1,000-point scorer and all
And all that.
that.
You touched on something I thought was quite interesting in talking about how you came into college underweight, maybe not where your coaches wanted you to be. Because you talked in your senior year reflecting on your college career, saying that you've taken away a lot of positives, but there's been a lot of mistakes that you made along the way, maybe some negatives to your college career. And you said that you want to make sure that everyone around you doesn't make the mistakes that you made. Can you go into that a little bit more if you remember? I know it was a little bit of time ago now.
No, I mean, I hold true. I would still say the same thing to this day, you know, about anywhere that I've been, anywhere I've played. I feel like if you're not your own harshest critic, and you don't take time to reflect on what you've done well, what you've done wrong, what you'd like to improve on next time, then you're kind of doing yourself a disservice if you don't do that. So I mean, there's still things with riders that I reflect on that I would have changed, and throughout my whole European career that I would have probably tried to, you know, do differently in order to have a better outcome. And but especially in high school, college, like that phase when you're still kind of young and you're kind of growing into your body, you're growing into your maturity, and you're growing into your abilities as an athlete. That's a really transformative and critical stage in your career. And yeah, I mean, looking back on it again, like I said, there's definitely some things I would have done differently. There's some things that I think that I handled exceptionally well for being young and immature, and not having a good frame of reference. So, you know, you take what you can get in different situations. But yeah, if there's anything that I could stress to like any kids listening or any people who are looking to make jumps in their career, It's like value your nutrition, value your body, because that is the that's your livelihood, right? That's the thing that's gonna take you from step A to step B and C and D and all that kind of stuff. So make sure, like, I used to run sneakers into the ground, and there's no way that those were good for my feet or my knees or my ankles. You know, now I get new shoes and I need new shoes. Like, I used to skimp and save on food. Now I buy good food, quality food, because that's the fuel that my body needs. Just this small stuff like that. And then never stop being like a student of the game. And just, you gotta really like watch basketball, live basketball, sleep basketball, because the more you're exposed to it, the more you're gonna learn, the more small things that you're gonna pick up on. And even if you don't notice it when you're actively doing it, some things are going to trickle in through the filters in your brain, and then you're going to find yourself doing stuff that you don't necessarily expect yourself to do, and you're going to kind of be like, why? And it's because you're just immersed in it. And yeah, so sorry, I went on a bit of a tangent there, but all that to say, that's kind of what I learned growing up through the span.
So, as a senior, you had a coaching change at University of Pennsylvania. A guy called Steve Donohue, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, came in. You said that previously it seemed like a job, like almost the fun was taken out of college. And I mean, just statistically, you went from 8 points a game to 12 points a game, 5 rebounds to 8 rebounds. What did Donohue do for not only your time at college, but your whole basketball career?
Yeah, I think Steve Donohue is like pretty instrumental in making me the player that I wound up being. It was just a different style of basketball. Like, I don't know how to explain it, but like his intensity, like, and his purpose behind coaching was awesome. And not to take anything away from Jerome Allen, he was a good coach in his own right. It was just like his and I styles just didn't mesh incredibly well. Yeah, Coach Donahue ran this awesome offense. It was like a, it's like a hybrid, like Princeton offense mixed with like some type of like flow offense, and it was really fun to play in, at least for me, because like with Coach Allen, I was just that big guy who's just expected to run the floor, set screens, and then get the ball on off a pick and roll if no one else is open, you know, get a couple dump offs like every game. Whereas with Coach Donahue with the Princeton offense, you know, I'm flashing to the elbow, I'm catching it on the elbow, we're running a very intuitive style of offense where it's just reads, back cuts, fills. Like, I had the responsibility or the ability to go into any type of pick and roll action whenever I see fit, or dribble handoff. I could also hit and then dive to the post and then go back to the basket, like from one of the blocks. So it was just this really nice flowy offense, and it really taught me a lot as a basketball player. And he had all this like crazy terminology, which I think really prepared me for going to play professionally, where you have to have this terminology, you have to know what other people are talking about, and you going in as a rookie to professional basketball, you're going to be playing with guys who are maybe 30 who know all this terminology, and they're going to use it casually, and you have to pick up on it quickly enough that you're able to implement it in the game. So with Coach Allen, there wasn't so much of that. And then with Donahue, he drilled it into us. Like, all of preseason was just like practicing fill behinds, practicing like how we guard and how we run flare screens, like what kind of shots we're looking for. So he was like very, very precise, let's just put it that way. And yeah, it was huge. And I think he really helped prepare me. Not only did it enhance my game at the time, but he really helped prepare me for the next level, which I was very, very appreciative of.
I know it's difficult to speculate on these kinds of things, and hindsight is of course 2020, but where do you think your career might have gone differently without that coaching change?
Yeah, honestly, I'm not really sure. Maybe I would have made it overseas, maybe to a lower level, maybe it would have fizzled out. Maybe my love for the game would have fizzled out my senior year, and I would have just got a 9 to 5 afterwards. Who really knows? But yeah, as you mentioned, as I've said, like, he really brought the fun back into the game for me, and he allowed me to, you know, I think I made all Ivy, maybe all Ivy second team, I'm not sure. I know I was all Big Five. And that and those accolades, you know, it didn't really mean much to me at the time. Just like, not a lot of the accolades that I achieved like throughout the time with Riders really mean a lot to me. I don't know, not to compare myself to Jokic or anything, but like that. But like his mentality after the game is no, not in my basketball game, but like in his mentality where he just says like, oh, like I get to go home now. Like, you know what I mean? It's like you just do it because you love winning. You're getting paid to win, like, and you want to win basketball games because you're a competitor. And I'm not really doing. I'm not doing it to get MVP. I'm not doing it to get All-Star Five. I'm just doing it so my team wins, so that we win trophies. And that mentality, I've tried to carry with me the whole time. Because if you get too high or too low on yourself, you know, it's gonna be gruesome.
Now, one of the most interesting conversations I think I've had with you was during the season when we spoke about your rookie year as a professional, going to Poland and going to a small town, talking about how difficult that was for you and how underprepared you felt going to a place where maybe there weren't so many English speakers, where you were a young guy playing in a team full of men. Can we just go over that again and just talk about that rookie year and how difficult that was for you?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, again, I came in underprepared for the physicality and for the mental toll that being somewhere that you're uncomfortable will take on you. And again, it was one of those moments where the fun was kind of sucked out of the game. Especially like that, our coach was also the president of the club, so there was zero checks and balances, and that was a real switch up for me. Because like at least in at university or something like that, like you know, there's the AD, like the athletic director, then there's the head coach, then there's the assistant coach. You know, there's like a chain of commands, and you know, if someone's messing up or they're not holding up their end of the deal, there's consequences, or there's a bit of a, you know, there's a pecking order that can be addressed. But if the president and owner of the club is your head coach, he can do, say, act however he wants, and there's no checks and balances. So that was a major switch up for me. And he also didn't speak a word of English, which was difficult for me because my Polish is very bad or non-existent, however you want to look at it. And so that was a bit of a change for me as well. And yeah, like you mentioned, I mean, the guy who was supposed to be my backup was like 39, 40 years old. He had a kid that was almost he had a kid when he was 18. And so I was 22 going in there. He had a kid who was 20, you know, so it's just a completely different animal than when you're playing at school and everyone was in within a 4 year range. So that was quite difficult for me to just like wrap my head around. And he was the If he wasn't the strongest guy I've ever played against, he's definitely like top three, top five. So I'm just getting beat up by this 40-year-old man at practice every day, and I got a coach yelling at me, and I don't know what he's saying, but it doesn't sound good. And you know, it was just one of those situations where, and you're in a town of 20, 30, maybe 1,000 people, in the middle of Poland where no one speaks a lick of English either, and you know, it starts to take a toll on you. You're having 2 day practices. You can't read the packaging on your food. You can't talk to anybody besides your other American teammates, who at the time when I first arrived there was also were all both two of them were rookies. And then a couple weeks in, we got a fourth, like more veteran player, who's actually from the Seattle area, from Tacoma. He's really good. He's just playing for they were runner up in Champions League 2 years ago, Romanian team. I can't remember the name, but anyways, I digress. Brandon Brown was his name. And he'd been around Poland a little bit, and he, you know, when he got there, it was a bit of a vibe switch up. Like he told us like, this is what you can expect. And it was nice to have that like senior leadership kind of, this is what you can expect. This is how they're able to treat you. This is how you can never let them treat you, like blah, blah, blah. And so that was good to kind of learn, but you know, I was already on my way out. I was like mentally checked out. I was ready to leave. And, yeah, so it was nice to hear from him, but unfortunately, it only lasted about 3 months. Also, my first salary was 2 weeks late, and my second salary, like month's salary, like never came. So I was kind of like, well, I'm not happy mentally. I'm not getting paid, like, but the basketball sucks too. Like, what am I doing here? You know, and it got to the point where you're just kind of like, all right, enough of this.
Yeah, and the payment, unfortunately, something that's far too common in some European leagues. Yeah, pay your players, people. So on that, was there ever a moment where you thought maybe this professional basketball in Europe isn't for me?
Oh yeah, totally. Like as I was leaving Poland, you know, I could see the writing on the wall. Like the coach wasn't happy with me. I wasn't happy there either, and I wasn't getting paid. They tell me they're bringing in another like center for me to like compete with for minutes, and I'm in my head, I'm like, "How you're not? You haven't paid me for the last 2 months, and now you're bringing in another guy at my position. How are you paying him? Like, you know, I don't know. It just didn't line up for me." And I was like, "All right, well, I'm out of here." So I tell my agent, you know, try and find me something else. I need to leave. So he's working on it. Obviously, you know, nothing is instant. So there was a solid like week or two where I'm sitting there like, is this really what I want to do, or do I just fly home and put this Penn degree to good use? Because ultimately, that is why I went to Penn. You know, it was to be able to kind of step into a job as highly paid as you almost possibly can be. I think they like the school has like one of the highest starting salaries in the US. And that's what I was going for. But unfortunately, or f sorry, fortunately, my agent was able to find me something in Austria. Unfortunately, back to the sketchiness of Poland, they never got me a visa. And so I had to go home back to the US. I went to Austria. They asked me for my papers right away, which I don't have. Then I get basically sent, I'm over the 90-day tourist visa in the EU, so I got to go back and wait for my visa to reset so that the Austrian team can bring me back. They lose a bunch of games while I'm at home, and then from there, they're basically like, "Okay, we'll bring you back next season." So that's when really in my head I was like, "Oh no, I'm not going to find a job next year." In the basketball world's eyes, like I just got cut from a team, and then I got sent home by another team. And I honestly, that's basically, if that happens to you, it's almost a death sentence as an American, you know, in terms of finding a new gig, unless your agent is an all-star, which mine was not. And so yeah, that's when I kind of was thinking, you know, it might be up for me. It might be time to start chasing a new career. But luckily, thank goodness, that same Austrian team that sent me home, or that I had to leave from, they were actually really, really high on me at the time, and they sent me a contract for the next season before that season was even up. So I think I signed to go back to Graz in maybe March or April of that same season. So I had some assurance, and I was like, no, I still want to give this a shot. I still want to give this basketball thing a shot. I don't want to give up on it quite yet.
And you came back guns blazing with it, what, 20 points a game, 11.9 rebounds. Glad you gave it a shot. So what was different about the setup in Austria that made you feel comfortable enough to be able to put in those performances?
Well, I don't know if it was good or bad, but the team I played for wasn't very good. They suffered like some major budget restrictions. The Austrian league's kind of weird, so if you don't have proof to that says that you can pay whatever people, or you still owe people from previous seasons money, which they did a lot, they were only allowed to get like I think two Americans, but they both had to be under 24 years old. So there were like a bunch of sanctions that were put on them by the league. And so they had to have two Americans that were both under 24 years old. They could have like one European player who was could be of any age, and then another European player who was like under 24 years old, or something like, I can't remember the exact details, but they just had like a lot of restrictions around who they could bring in. I don't even think they brought in all the imports that they could technically could have brought in. And you know, our sixth man was like a high school, it's like essentially like if a Charnwood or like a Barking Abbey like kid, you know, like one of the academy kids was like your sixth man on a BBL team. You know, it's just not, you know, like if that's the situation that you're in, it's probably not, it's looking pretty bleak for you. I think we won like three games, but all that to say, that's why my stats were so inflated, because I was just able to do what I think I played like 38.5 minutes a game. And it was only because like one half I sat out because I think I hurt my back or something. And so that's what brought down my average. But other than that, I played 40 minutes a game, you know, like a big high usability rating. I made the All-Star game, you know, like the stats like were really good. And like, don't get me wrong, like it was a quality league and everything, but it was kind of good for me. And that's kind of exactly what I needed after the whole shenanigans that happened in Poland. I needed a season where I could kind of just dominate and like show my stuff and have absolute free rein. You know, no shot was a bad shot for me. I could do whatever I wanted. It was basically for me, it was like pickup, but I was getting paid to do it, and I was playing professionally, and I was the best player on my team. So, you know, it was a weird situation, but for me, it was exactly what I needed. And then, luckily, the team who had, I think they'd won two league titles in a row, and they were going for the third. They picked me up for their center the next season. Koffenberg did, and because they knew I was talented, I was just on a bad team. And then from there, I was able to, you know, win three titles with Koffenberg as well, which was great.
Yeah, you showed you can win. You showed you could be part of a winning organization and put up good numbers, which I guess caught the attention of Mr. Rob Paternostro. So when you landed in Leicester, it was your COVID season, a little bit weird, cut short. But what made you, in the limited time you had at Leicester, what made you feel like you wanted to stay?
So I mean, again, mentioned Mr. Paternostro. You know, I think that's a reason why a lot of us wind up wanting to stay. He's just one of those guys. He's been through it. He's played and he's been around Europe. He knows what it's like in other places, and he knows how to, you know, get along with players to a degree where you feel comfortable around him, but also to like make boundaries as a coach, to like make sure that you can see that like the where the authority lies and everything like that, you know. So I think Rob does a really good job of like walking that line, where like, you know, you're boys, but when it comes down to it, you need to do what he says. And and that's what I respect about him a lot, because that is a really, really hard line to walk. And I've seen a lot of coaches fail at doing that. And he does that really well. So he's definitely one of those things. Obviously, the comfortability and the cultural similarities to the US were definitely a draw, like a focal point for me. Don't get me wrong, like I love living in Austria. That was amazing. And that was like a little bit closer to like Western civilization, I guess, than Poland and Bosnia were for me. So Austria was honestly a pretty good time. But you know, there's definitely some places, and I knew this, there's some places, if I decided to leave, there's some places I could wind up that I've been already, which I would probably not thrive in. But I know that if I stay in England, I will thrive here, and I will, at least if nothing else, enjoy being here and exploring like the British countryside, British cities, British culture. Like the people are really nice, the food is good. You know what I mean? Like it's just one of those things where I knew that like my life outside of basketball was going to be quality, and I'm a huge believer in you know, peace of mind will translate to performance on the court. If you're happy with what's going on around you, you're going to perform well. And yeah, so that was that played into it as well. And then you know, COVID was an interesting time for everybody. My fiance Greta came back from Austria, and the only place that we could stay together was England, because she couldn't come back to America. We weren't engaged or married at the time. So she couldn't come back to America. I couldn't go to Austria. So the only place we could realistically stay together was England. And me and Russell had already spoken like around when the season was ending about coming back and doing my master's and stuff. So I was just like, you know what? I got a season cut short. I want to do this master's. It's the only place I can realistically stay. So I just stayed over the summer after COVID and hung out, worked out as much as I could, and started enrolling in Loughborough. And then I just did all that kind of stuff, and it was great.
Now, your second season in Leicester, your first full season, was then the season where it was behind closed doors. Weird for me, my first season covering the Riders, and being in the empty arena watching sport, watching you guys go on and win the league. How do you reflect on that season without the fans?
Yeah, it was definitely weird. I mean, I think any basketball player would tell you it was weird with no fans because that's kind of where you draw your energy from, whether it's, in an opponent's arena or your own. That's like the lifeblood, that's the backbone of like why you play basketball is to for the fans. And to not have them there was very, very weird. It was also kind of pure in a way that in that like nobody had a real true advantage, minus maybe like a floor or rim advantage, I guess, in the sense like, okay, obviously you get more repetitions up on your home court, the lighting, the way the backdrop and all that kind of stuff, and the way the ball bounces on your own home floor. But like all things the same, it should be relatively the same no matter where you go play. Baskets 10 feet, floors 96 feet, 94 feet, 92 feet, whatever it is. I should
You've
probably
only been
know
playing it your whole life. It's fine.
that. Should probably. I just know I have to run it a million times a game. That's all I
You
know.
know how big the paint is.
This gets further and further. Yeah. It gets further and further the longer the game goes on. No, but yeah, I mean it should be the same, but that being said, it's not always the same. Some of the which I find still really weird, not to rag on the BBL too much, but I just have to get this off my chest while I'm here. Stop with the hanging baskets, man. Cheshire, Glasgow, who else has hanging baskets from the wall? It's like literally not even legal in most countries or most leagues in the world. Like you can't even use rims like that. I don't know how they're still allowed, but sorry, that's just a tangent that I
No, you're
must go
retired
on.
now, you can say. You're not
I feel
officially
like
Ryder's
they're
captain.
unsafe.
Get
Yeah, I'm
it
not.
off your
Yeah,
chest.
also figure out the reffing situation. Figure out the referee situation.
Are
I'm done.
seeing
I'm
a
done. I'm
very
done.
different Darion Nelson-Henry, ladies and gentlemen. The responsibility is lifted off his shoulders, and he's guns blazing.
Is it that different? I feel like I made my opinion about the referees very clear while I played, but that's just me.
The opinions of Darion
Yeah.
Nelson-Henry do not necessarily reflect the views of the CJ Sports podcast.
Sorry. Don't want to get you in any trouble, but I had to say it while I'm here. But anyway, sorry, where were we? Oh, the COVID season. Yeah. No, the COVID season was good. As I said, it was like a very pure form of basketball where it was just like mano e mano. You don't get any like fake hype from the crowd. You don't get any confidence boost from like whatever is going on. It's just one team playing against another team. Who prepared better? Who's in better shape? Or who's running better stuff and who's running their stuff more crisply on a regular basis. And I mean, luckily we didn't win any of the standalone titles, but we won the one, in my opinion, that matters most. Obviously the final is really, really fun to win in terms of like enjoyment, but the one that means the most, at least to me, is the championship, which we were lucky enough to win that year. And we proved that we were the most consistent team in a pure setting, which is like pretty awesome looking back on it.
So looking back, there's a lot of talk in the NBA discourse about the bubble championship and whether it was more difficult, less difficult to win. What are your views on that, about playing a whole season without any fans and any of the home court advantages such?
Yeah, I mean the bubble was kind of weird because like what did they do? They played out like the rest of the regular season, or they did like the play-in
Yeah, they
games,
did
or they
12
like
games and then the
half.
playoffs.
Yeah, so like half the teams, like the teams that were already like out of contention for playoffs, like they didn't even like go to Orlando or whatever, and then like as other teams started dropping off and like being out of contention of the playoffs, then they were out of, I don't know. It was just weird. So like theirs was like an abridged season that led to behind closed doors, like kind of stuff like that. So I feel like it lost some validity, in my opinion, because they had played in front of fans, they took a break, and then they came back and finished that same season behind closed doors. Whereas we, as in European basketball, I guess, like took that whole rest of that same season. The season where that was cut short was just over. It got cut short. It meant nothing. Chalk it up, whatever. And then the next season, everyone came back and you played from go, a full season behind closed doors. So that, like, I think to me that holds like a lot more merit. Like when you're everyone's starting in the same place, with a brand new team essentially, and then you roll the ball out and you say, okay, have a season. That's one thing. And that's why, like, our, I guess, bubble season is so special to me in that way, because we were the best during that season when the situation was as it was. The NBA bubble, I kind of discredit a little bit just because of the points that I just mentioned and stuff like that. So that's my take on it. I don't know if everyone feels the same way, whether on the team or the rest of the world, but that's my take.
So then, was there a feeling the following year, having won the championship but not in front of the fans, that you wanted to do it again in front of the home fans?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. That was a major part of it. Doing it on a what felt like a bigger platform was really special again. And then, I mean, just the consistency, and I just know, and I can speak from experience, when Riders teams have like a returning core unit, they're able to usually accomplish something pretty special, because a lot of the stuff we do, you know, a lot of the plays we run and the sets that we run and the defensive strategy and stuff like that, like Rob does call stuff here and there, and we go over a lot of stuff throughout the week where we are deciding what we're going to do. But at the end of the day, he really leaves the responsibility on us. He gives us a lot of the onus to kind of make those decisions on the fly on the court. And the better that you can understand what somebody else is going to do, or the better somebody else can understand what you're going to do, you know, the more success you're going to have in situations like that. So I think it definitely helped, just the consistency that we came back with. We had the two-time MVP Gino there, and we put a really, really solid team together. I mean, Zach Jackson was coming back off injury and he performed really well. You know, so it was one of those situations where I think the stars just kind of aligned, and honestly, we should have had four. We kind of just dropped the ball on the trophy one against Bristol, but it's not going to haunt me for the rest of my life or anything.
It sounds like it's haunted you for a month.
Yeah, kind of does, but you know, what can you do? I don't have a time machine. I can just appreciate the fact that we were able to get 3 out of 4, which is still pretty special.
Now, you mentioned Gino Crandall, and it was a connection, obviously, that you two had during that treble-winning season was almost telepathic, the way you two played together. What was it like to play with a guy that seemed to just know exactly where you wanted the ball all the time?
Yeah, I mean, he's a special player, and I don't know how much of it had to do with me. I guess the main thing I would say that really helped our relationship is that we're both like very, very vocal and very trusting of one another. You know, something would go a little bit differently than we saw it going. Maybe he'd lead me a little bit too far with a pass, or, you know, he'd want me to reset a screen when somebody goes under and I would roll, so the timing would be messed up, or, you know, or something like that. And, you know, we would just get together at the next dead ball or on the free throw line, or like whenever the situation would arise, you know, we would just get together and be like, you know, my bad, like next time I'm going to roll faster, so I'll get that pass. And or next time, you know, just flip and sit behind like on the screen. And if the big step's out, I'll slip it and you can throw one over the top. You know, like, so we had like a very, very open dialogue, which I think helped us. But like, he's so talented, you know, I think he could probably do pretty well with just about any big man. I don't know how much that had to do with me, but I definitely think that our dialogue, our discourse, and like our trust in one another, and then our just desire to win, you know. And I think when you know someone else that you're playing with, like whatever 30 minutes a game, like if you know that they're committed to winning and they want to get the job done, it gives you the confidence to You know, play your heart out because you know the other guy's going to do the same thing, which unfortunately, on some teams that I've been on, none of the Riders teams, but some teams I've been on in Europe and some teams I've been on in my life, AAU, high school, college, whatever, you don't always get that. You don't always feel that from some guys. So it's hard to, you know, give it your all when you know the guy next to you is half-assing it. Excuse my language.
I do think that you're selling yourself short a fair amount. I mean, if you talk about that treble season, especially, I remember almost the start of every game. Rob always looked to find you in the post to make something happen, either passing it or scoring it. Do you feel like you were there to set the tone in especially the big games during that season?
Yeah, I mean, I just think it's good. Modern basketball is changing a lot. There's not as many back to the basket touches happening anymore. It's a lot more fluid more often than not. So I think part of it was for Rob to like get me going. You know, if you're able to get that first look of the game and you see the ball go through the net, you know, you got a little pep in your step and you're feeling good. So I think part of it's that. Another part of it is just kind of setting in a tone like, we're gonna go inside. We're gonna pound it in there like all night. It's not gonna be easy. You're gonna have to work like on defense. You're gonna have to work like against us to get stops, stuff like that. So like, there's a psychological element to it, like on a personal and a team level. It's also, I think Rob had a lot of trust in me to get the job done. So that's another one. And also, I don't know. Yeah, as I said, probably about a million pick and rolls run every game. I don't know how many back to the basket looks are given every game, but I promise you it's not as many as pick and rolls or ball screens or even other sorts of like, you know, step up, like screening in general is usually a big man's job. So it feels good to get a screen set for you every once in a while so you can go to work.
Just on the final thing on the connection with Gene, I remember in preseason on his first season, there was a slight feeling with the way he was experimental with passes. There was a fair few turnovers, some flashy dribbling he's doing, and there was a sentiment at least thinking that Rob's perhaps not going to be a fan of this style of play from him. And obviously that then developed, and Rob was like, okay, this guy's super talented. Let's let him go. Let him
Yeah.
create. And you obviously had those.
I actually
Go on.
remember. Sorry, I just have a funny anecdote like about that because there was day one. Gino was like fresh off the plane. If it wasn't the same day he got off the plane, it was like the very next day he got in like at 2 a.m. and then came to practice. No one was expecting, and I think it was to me, and it hit my hands and went out of bounds. I was like, dang, I should have had that one. And Gino just looked at me like, all good, all good. Like, you'll get it next time. Rob looked at me and I looked at Rob. And I think like we went the other way. It wasn't like up and down basketball. We were doing something like transition drill or whatever. So we stayed and Rob like stayed down there because they went to the other end and he was talking to me. And he was just like, that's a little crazy, right? And I was just like, yeah, it's a little crazy, but it was a good pass. Like, I just wasn't expecting it. Like, if I would have been expecting it, like I would have easily caught it and it would have been a layup. He's like, I love a behind the back pass. I always used to throw behind the back passes. I love that. And I was just like, I love it too. Like, it's awesome. He's got it. Like, I could tell he's good. I love that pass. I was like, dude, you don't have to tell me. Like, if I got somebody throwing passes like that to me, we're gonna be just fine. I just need to know that it's coming because if I don't know that the person has the ability, because not a lot of people have that ability, then I'm not going to be expecting it. So like once he threw that pass, I knew like just whenever he has the ball, just be hands ready. And you know, Rob told like didn't take anything away from him, didn't chill him out, didn't like tell him to like calm down or anything. It was day one. Maybe his pass was a foot outside of where it needed to be. Like my hands weren't ready. But like he could see the future, I could see the vision. We both knew that like that pass was symbolic of like who Gino was gonna be, and it's exactly what it wound up being.
You know,
So
that's so.
sorry. Anyways, that
No,
was
no,
my
no. That's awesome.
Gino behind the back pass anecdote.
You know what I find so funny about that is that whenever Rob's feeling himself and he gets the ball and he needs to give it back to the referee, he's always throwing the behind the back to the
I told you the
ref.
behind the back, man. I told you he
He
loves them.
absolutely loves the behind the back. So, yeah, having that. two seasons with him and going into the second season, having already built a year's worth of connection with him, do you think you guys needed that time to really get on that level? And, you know, he's doing all sorts of crazy stuff, and for you to get on the same page as him?
Yeah, I mean, like I said before, the more time that you have to spend with somebody, especially when you play in such a fluid system like Riders have, the more time that you have to spend with somebody, the better things are going to get. And honestly, I don't know what would have happened if he would have stayed for a third season. I guess we'll never know, in the words of Kanye. But yeah, it was phenomenal playing with him, especially once I got adjusted to him. I don't know, like, ceiling would have been, like, I don't know, maybe we reached the ceiling, maybe there was more to come, but yeah, it was really nice, it was really great playing with him, and I appreciate the partnership that we were able to form.
Obviously, going into this season, you dropped the bombshell towards the end of it that you are going to retire at the end of the season. I've heard you talk about the fact that you didn't want to leave a gap in the resume. You've completed your master's degree, and congratulations on that. So when did you know? Was it something that you pre-planned, maybe going into the season you had a feeling you might want to, or was it something mid-season that you decided?
Yeah, to be honest, I kind of had a feeling. I wasn't even really sure if I was going to play this last season, just as because like the Masters was technically wrapped up. I just hadn't like graduated yet. So I wasn't really sure if I wanted to, but I really wanted to stick out one more season with the guys, and I wanted to, have another successful season. Unfortunately, like, we weren't able to get any trophies up there, but I mean, in 3 out of 4 competitions, we were runner up to an amazing London Lions team. And it would have been really sweet if we could have gotten at least one. It would have been really nice, but, yeah, credit to them, credit to London. But anyways, yeah, but I knew I was going to retire. I could see the writing on the wall a little bit. Like, I had a feeling, you know, if for whatever reason things went exceptionally well, maybe I would have extended it for another year. But I could kind of tell, like, I said this to Greta and my mom actually the other day, where it was like, when the stars align and everything kind of just points you one direction, you're kind of foolish not to follow it. My body is starting to get achy. I got a couple nagging injuries that like I really just were kind of tough to overcome, and it seemed like all the work I was doing to kind of mitigate them was not really helping as much as it used to. You know, you finish your masters, you're getting married. And it's just like, all when everything starts to kind of line up in a certain way, it kind of just leads you that way on its own. And that's kind of what it felt like for me. Yeah, unfortunately, my love for basketball has not diminished. Like, I was still watching the NBA playoffs and the NBA finals like an absolute lunatic, screaming at the TV. Maybe that's because I can't do it myself anymore, so I felt like I needed to yell at somebody. I don't know what it was.
No, you said you're Jokic.
My love for basketball has not diminished, but... Yeah, exactly. My love for basketball has not diminished, but the progress and the trajectory of my life has changed, and it just felt like it was about that time, you know.
It's obviously something that's being appreciated more now, is the after the career stuff and how difficult it can be for athletes who, you know, just because your professional life in basketball has ended, you've still got so much life to go, and you have to really prepare for that. And of course, there's going to be things that you wish went differently in your career, but do you feel a sense of satisfaction that you achieved, you know, everything you wanted to achieve in your career? Do you look back at it and go, I'm satisfied with the body of work I put in professional sport?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I was able to win multiple titles in multiple countries. I was able to, you know, again, I said this, I'm not huge on personal accolades, but I was able to achieve some personal accolades just about everywhere I went, which was at least something to put on the CV. And I was also able to experience some amazing cities, amazing people that I would never have the chance otherwise to have met. And, you know, again, I said this in the beginning of the podcast, and I'll say it again once more, you know, I put in tens of thousands of hours into basketball, and they say like that's like the Malcolm Gladwell, like 10,000 hours, then you become a professional thing, whatever. But it's like, yeah, if I put in this much time to something, like I should be able to get something out of it. And you know, I can really, really honestly say that I got a lot out of basketball. It was absolutely worth every second that I put into it. You know, I never would have had half the experiences or the you know, what's the right word? I don't know. The shelf of like life achievements, I guess. Like I wouldn't, it's not necessarily a trophy, but it's like I've been to over like 20 countries. I've, you know, met people everywhere along the way. I've got 2 degrees from it. I've like, you know, there's just so like there's like all these like life boxes that need
You've
to be
written
ticked,
some
and you
amazing
know,
chapters in the book of life, right?
boom, exactly. I couldn't have said it better myself. I tried to say it better
I
myself,
know,
but
I
I
let you
couldn't.
try.
I
I was letting you try so hard, but
couldn't. No, that's perfect. That's why you would always do my write-ups, Charlie. That's why.
no, that was you.
That
That
was me. I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding.
was you.
I got my ghostwriter.
Well, that's out now. I'm just a writer now.
No, but yeah, exactly as you said. There was just so many things I wouldn't be able to do without basketball. So, do I regret any of it? No. Am I appreciative of it? Absolutely. And am I gonna miss it? Yes, in some ways, and no, in some ways. But you know, that's part of life. You know, you graduate from one chapter and you move on to the next one. And those experiences that you gained along the way are going to help shape what's next for you.
And are you staying around the game of basketball now? Obviously, you're going on to do a more of a 9 to 5 elsewhere,
Yeah.
but what's your involvement in basketball going to look like going forward?
So I'm definitely going to take a step back for a little while. I really would like to pursue a professional career. Wherever that takes me, you know, it's kind of undecided still at the moment, unfortunately. I would like to get something solidified sooner rather than later, but it's still in the works. But other than that, you know, I'll definitely play in like a men's league. I'll definitely play in you know, maybe like a 2 games a week or like 1 game a week kind of men's league, just to stay in shape and like keep, you know, keep the touch alive, keep the dimes coming. But other than that, I'll take a step back, and then maybe I'll reassess a few years down the line. Maybe my team needs help and I can kind of fill in and work some guys out. I'd much rather do like workout stuff and kind of individual like big man training or something like that. I don't know if I necessarily want to go back to the basketball schedule, because I'm really enjoying having my weekends. Those are sweets, and I've heard that they're really fun. So I'm gonna try and hold on to those as best I can. But yeah, in terms of like just working out in the evenings, or you know, doing a little extracurricular stuff, I'm not opposed to it. I don't want to become a pundit. I don't want to become a coach. But if some people need some help here and there, I could definitely see myself doing that.
You know what I've seen from that as well is that it's kind of come full circle. Like now you're the older backup center battering some young kid in a in a game, making them question whether they want to play again.
Yeah, you know, somebody's got to do it. Somebody's got to put these kids in their place. No, I'm just kidding. No, but it was a challenge. It was a trial, and it like tested my commitment. It tested my enthusiasm and stuff like that. And you know, am I allowed to swear?
Yes, well.
Okay. But sometimes these kids like think shit is sweet, and like no one's gonna put them on their ass. And you know, sometimes somebody's got to come in there and do it. And like I had, luckily, I'm luckily or unluckily, I don't know. I had a lot of guys who were bigger than me, stronger than me, older than me, tougher than me, and a lot of those guys would come in and put me on my ass. And sometimes you need that. And you know, I don't want to be like that asshole. Like, I don't know, I don't want to be that guy. I know that I don't want to compare myself to like Drew Sullivan or anything like that, but like he was a great locker room guy, and he was a good like guy to like really test your wherewithal, you know, test your desire, like test your commitment to basketball. And you know, some of these kids need to learn. I don't think I'm quite to his level at all, because I've heard some funny stories about him. I never met him, unfortunately. But you know, something like that, where you can really explain to these guys, or like test these kids, like on like what their commitment level is important.
Well, look, Darren, I hope it's been a good look back at your entire career and a reflection of your journey. I mean, I've definitely enjoyed hearing about how your entire story and some behind the scenes on it. So I hope it's been a nice reflection for you too.
No, it's great. And I appreciate you taking the time to chat with me. It's always fun to talk about yourself, I guess, for a little while. But no, I think, and I just want to say to you, Charlie, thank you for everything you've done for us. You made it an awesome experience, and you've been a pleasure to work with the whole way throughout. So thank you for everything as well.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate that. And like I said, back to you. You've been a consummate professional the whole time you've been at the Riders, and a credit to the sport of basketball as well. Now, unfortunately, that's all we've got time for today in the CJ Sports Podcast. Thank you all very much for listening. I do appreciate your time. Please follow me on Twitter and Instagram on @CJ Sports Blog. And for now, that's goodbye from me.